This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
KMOX is at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Now, here's your host, Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, folks, good gardening. We are live and lively from St. Louis Composting Valley Park location, which is on Elam Avenue, just north of 44, between really 44 and where? The Merrimack River? No. Doesn't matter. But it's right on one. So Elam is right off 141. There's a stoplight. You don't have to worry about it. All the construction seems to be done road-wise, but there's some construction right here by St. Louis Composting. But it doesn't interfere with your ability to come out. And today's a perfect day to come to St. Louis Composting, any of the locations, because they're not overloaded with work because of the weather and everything else. So if you have questions or concerns or comments, you stop by St. Louis Composting. The locations are, of course, the Valley Park location where we are, Belleville facility, that's on Mine Hall Road, Florissant facilities on County Park Road, Maryland Heights facility, Pacific facility, and the City of St. Louis facility. So all kinds of other stuff going on in the outdoors. Just thank goodness for the rain. No, we wanted to have a dry day so we could be here at St. Louis Composting and go around and sniff all the piles of all the organic matter and everything else. And I did walk around and do some sniffing, but I didn't do a whole lot because I was getting kind of soaked. Remember, this is your show, and we're going to be talking about your landscape, your lawn, your gardens, your houseplants, or whatever's on your mind. And I'm going to try to share information with you so you can make good, sound decisions. Remember, healthy plants mean work, timing, and information. So 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. The true brains behind this live and lively broadcast this week in studio producing is Greg and Zach. Always takes two people because my show is so difficult. And Ryan, he's here doing the remote engineering. So I've done a lot of shows with Ryan over the years, so he knows I'm a little bit difficult to work with. No, he can handle it. But I'm Mike Miller. I've been doing the Garden Hotline since 1994, and I've written 5 gardening books. 2 are currently available at various locations. And I do write articles for the Missouri Gardener magazine. If you'd like for me to come to your home and do what I call a walk and talk, which is a aesthetic problem solving or anything else, you can go to my website, the Good Gardening Stroll page. That's where the monthly updates are, but the home page is where my phone number and email address is. After the show today, I'm headed out to Wentzville. So rain or shine, I come, sleet, snow, anything else. If it's too icy, I probably won't, but I don't think this is going to turn to ice. Today's Good Gardening Stroll, which is brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. The clouds, north, northeast, were blowing to the south, southwest. Grayness, the color of the early morning, but not here at St. Louis Composting. It's dark, organic colors. It's always the color of the day and night here at St. Louis Composting. Tractor trailers sit ready to roll to spread material, organic material, throughout the metropolitan area. And it's a greener place. That's what it's all about. One front loader scoops and moves. Bag material waits for to find a new home. So they have bag mulches and compost and all kinds of other things as well. Quonsets offer weather protection for some of the products. A truck full of green waste dumps. The same day, the very stuff will sit there, and maybe that will end up in your landscape. After the cooking and testing, they do test everything. They send samples to have it tested in a lab as well. As I got out of my car, because I was, it was raining pretty darn hard. I stood under the entranceway to here at St. Louis Composting. And the tin roof, boy, the sound of the rhythm of the rain was just absolutely perfect. Plantings around the building, which are boulder-edged, viburnums, miscanthus. Raining enough to make the miscanthus almost weep. There are some cedars and hornbeams, and there's an orange-flowered canna. and that's the standout among the other landscape plants in the area. Pavement, you would think, or all this organic stuff and everything else is really clean. It's kind of amazing. I walked all the way around the Quonset huts and everything else, and it's just absolutely amazing. If you want to do core aeration and you want to spread some compost afterwards, and you can't, I don't know how to do this or anything else, they actually do rent top dressing machines here. So you just put the compost in the machine and you just walk along with it, and it spreads it exactly what is needed. Also, St. Louis Composting has a new product. They do sell various types of landscape rock as well. But St. Louis Composting, if you have any questions or concerns about your outdoors, you can call me, of course, at 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. If you have questions about St. Louis Composting locations and hours and everything else, well, you can call them at 636-861-3344. So all kinds of different stuff going on today. It's absolutely amazing. We were already ahead on the amount of rainfall, even though we had those dry spells throughout the year and everything else. It seems like we were behind, but no, and I'm glad this rain came because it was starting to get a little bit dry. What I used in my own landscape to determine how dry it is actually getting is I have this gold moss or sedum acre. And the sedum acre, when it gets dry, and you think sedums never get dry, but yes, they do. When it gets dry, it loses its darker, greener color and almost turns like a pale, greenish white. And my, sedum gold moss was starting to do that. So last Wednesday when I was out working in the yard, I watered it really well. It turned it to green. And now with all this rain, it will be perfectly green. So if you do have any questions or concerns, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Let's get Margie in before we get a break. Margie, how are you today?
How about you?
Very good.
I have two questions. I took out my knockout roses, and I'm wondering what to replace them with. And the other thing is all these different things that are in the yard, and makes it so hard to mow. So I'm just going to listen on the radio, and you can talk that way. Is that agreeable?
Sure. I mean, why did you take out your roses?
Because of rosette disease.
Oh. Well, if you want to put back, if you want to put back some knockout roses, you can, because it is transmitted by spider mites. So if you got rid of them, the plants entirely, there should not be any residual effect or impact of this rosette.
Oh, everything I read was that get them out, get rid of it, and don't put roses back there. So I was wondering what to put there.
Go ahead.
Roses.
Well, so, if you don't want to put roses in, there's a plant called Potentilla, P-O-T-E-N-T-I-L-L-A. It's a yellow-flowered shrub, and it stays relatively, so there's several different varieties, but one of them stays relatively small, 2 to 3 feet, and it pretty much flowers all summer long.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Potentilla. All right.
Right. And as far as the things that are in your lawn that makes it difficult to mow, that's probably various weeds. And so, to figure out what kind of weeds there are and then what you need to do with a weed circumstance, it could be post-emergent. So in other words, spraying herbicides on the weeds, like broadleaf weeds or something like that with a Weed Be Gone, or a pre-emergent, which would be something that you would apply either depending upon what type of weeds you have, either when the forsythia is in bloom in the springtime or basically a couple weeks prior to this in mid to late August for the winter time, the cool season weeds.
Okay.
So you have to really find out what you have before you can just go out there and start, shotgunning, unless you just want to kill off everything, and I don't think you want to do that.
Yes. Okay, so Weed Be Gone would be in the fall, and the pre-emergent is in spring. Is that right?
No, Weed Be Gone can be applied at any time.
Oh, okay.
So the pre-emergent is twice a year, once in the spring, once in August. So there's two different annual weeds. One's a warm season weed. So those are the ones that, you know, are really, let's say, the crabgrass and all that kind of stuff. And then there's cool season weeds, which is like henbit and things along that line. So they germinate at different times. They grow at different times. And the cool season weeds die off when it starts getting warm in late to mid-spring, depending upon. And then the other one dies off when the weather gets too cold. So the crabgrass, you know, is kind of on its downhill side. Once the weather starts getting cooler and cooler and cooler, it'll disappear.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Mike.
Certainly. Thanks for calling. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Once again, here's Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, folks, we are live and lively from St. Louis Composting, the headquarters here in Valley Park on Elam Avenue, which is just north of 44. It's on the west side of 141. There's a stoplight, so you don't have to worry about getting here, no matter what direction you're coming from. So they've got locations throughout the metropolitan area. Let's go to Alhambra, Illinois, and go into Ron's yard. Ron, how are you today?
I'm good, Mike. How are you?
Very good.
I love your show. Listen every Saturday.
Well, thanks for having me on your show.
One of my kids built a house last summer, and unfortunately, we didn't get around to seeding his lawn until early November. So, as you can imagine, we got kind of a spotty stand. What I was thinking of doing, it was a two-acre lot. What I was thinking of doing is having a bunch of compost delivered and spreading grass seed, and then using one of the machines from the Belleville location, spread the compost lightly over the top of that. Does that make sense to you, or should I take a different approach?
I think that part is fine. There's one part that you're missing, though. You should get something called a core aerator, either lawn service or rent one yourself, and core aerate your lawn or his lawn or their lawn before you do anything else prior to that. What that's going to do, and is this new construction, I'm assuming?
Yes, it is.
So the soil is so compacted that it's probably going to be really brutal, even if you would get the timing and everything exactly right. So the core aeration will open up. It takes plugs out of the ground. Then when you put the seed down and the compost down, that the compost will fall into the holes and it will start, you know, let's say, aerating your soil, because your soil is so compacted, it's going to be very difficult for a lawn not to necessarily just germinate, but to survive, let's say, our weather and everything else. So core aeration, seeding, and then composting on top of that would be probably what I'd recommend.
Okay. As far as the thickness of the composting, what do you think, like a quarter inch?
Yeah, between a quarter or a half inch. Yeah, something along that line, that's plenty. And also, if you're seeding a lawn, just realize even under ideal, you know, conditions, especially here in, you know, our region, you're probably going to have to overseed every May and every September for multiple years before you're going to get a thick lawn.
Yeah, yeah, I've heard you say that before. It's not a one-year kind of thing. So
no, it isn't.
Okay, and this is about the time of year to be doing that, right?
Yeah, get it, sooner the better, because we don't know what our weather is going to be like.
Yeah, if it ever stops raining, so.
Well, I mean, those forecasts on the internet are saying it's going to be a severely cold winter, blah, 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 blah. And who knows, you know, because you just don't.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks, Mike. I appreciate it.
Yep. Certainly. And now let's go to Dave, and Dave is in St. Peter's. Dave, how are you today?
Oh, I just couldn't be any better. Thank you for asking.
Great.
I've got an interesting problem in my backyard. I had these little volunteer trees growing in my backyard all over everywhere. And finally, I gave up trying to cut them down and kill them. And I took one over to the Missouri Extension Service, and they told me it was a black sycamore weed and that Roundup would kill them. So I tried Roundup on them, and it knocked it back really well, but they're coming back. Have you ever heard of that, a black sycamore weed?
Sycamore, let's see. Not necessarily. I'm not familiar with that particular variety, but if they're identifying as that, and basically probably the ones that you put the Roundup on were killed, but in essence, there's other ones coming up. So that's probably, it's not the ones that you've sprayed, because Roundup should kill them, let's see, sycamore,
Roundup so which, was kind of a last resort for me.
Yeah, because, I'm assuming you can either use a sponge or a paintbrush and just paint it right onto the plant so you don't have a dead spot around it.
Mm-hmm. They're literally coming out to where I killed them. As soon as I knew they were dying, I ran the lawnmower over them, and they're coming back out of the spot where the stumps are.
Well, then probably what you should do is change the variety of Roundup you're using. There's two different ones. One's for killing woody plants, and the other one's just regular Roundup for killing herbaceous plants. So get the Roundup. It'll say poison ivy killer and woody plant killer. Use that one.
Okay, we'll give it a try.
Because, sycamore, black sycamore, I don't know black sycamores at all. I know regular sycamores. They're all over the place. They use them for street trees and everything else. But
I've got a sycamore in the backyard, they've got the same leaves, and they have thorns on them. And I don't know that my sycamore tree has thorns on the branches.
Oh, so you actually have black locust, not black sycamore.
Black locust?
Yes, okay. L-O-C-U-S-T.
Okay.
Once you said it has the thorns, that's a native one. They're ferocious as far as seeding and everything else.
No kidding.
Yeah. So sycamore, no, you don't have. Because when you were saying black sycamore, I was really confused. I was thinking, maybe I'm not as smart
leaves,
as I'm thinking.
These leaves look like my sycamore tree. Maybe my sycamore tree is actually a locust.
but that's
there's
probably
no
the case.
On my sycamore. There's no thorns on my sycamore tree.
Yeah, generally some of them will have thorns, and some of them have really, black locusts have huge thorns sometimes. They'll have thorns, two inches in size. The locust trees in general have big clusters. They're in the bean family, so they'll have clusters of white flowers.
Yeah.
And they're really obvious when they're in flower. Where the sycamore tree, you don't really see its flowers. All you end up seeing is the little balls that hang up, which are actually the seeds. It's very difficult to see a sycamore in flower.
Yeah, you have to handle them with gloves.
Yeah, right.
Otherwise, they'll bite you.
Yeah, so in other words, get the Roundup for killing poison ivy and woody plants. Don't use regular Roundup.
All right, I'll give it a try. Thank you.
Yep, good luck with that. If anybody else has any questions or concerns, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Mike Miller, we are live and lively from St. Louis Composting headquarters here in Valley Park. If you'd like to come by and say hi or just wave or whatever, please do that. We'll be back after these messages.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with your host, Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, speaking of St. Louis Composting, we're in the Valley Park location. It's one of 6 or 7 or 8 or 9 or 10 or 11, 12. I don't know how many they have. No, they have 6. But joining me right now is Sarah. And Sarah has been here for 5.5 years. And she's like the translator from the compost world to the radio world. So, Sarah, how are you today?
Good. How are you doing, Mike?
Very good. What's going on out here besides rain?
Besides rain, we're just loading trucks up with STA certified field and turf compost so they can start top dressing and corating their lawns.
Right. People just don't understand. They look at dirt or soil or whatever and they don't realize it's alive and it needs to be regenerated.
It does.
And especially like that call I just took from a gentleman who was brand new construction, his son. And the soil is so compacted, you got to start basically all over again.
Right.
And that's the way to do it is with compost.
Absolutely.
And the what is it, STL?
STA certified. It stands for Seal of Test and Assurance. And it just means it's certified by the U.S. Composting Council. And we get our compost tested every month.
Every month. And do you do on-site testing here too?
We do, yes.
That's what I, because I keep saying that you not only test here, but you also send it to places to make sure that something has been missed. And I remember a couple years ago where you took a product off the market because they found or you found something that wasn't really all that good in it. So it's not like you're just going to kind of sneak and, you know, okay, go ahead and take this. We'll just reduce the price. That's a nice thing. Patrick set this whole company up, and I've known him way before St. Louis Composting, with the idea that he just wanted top quality products, top quality staff at all locations and everything else.
Absolutely. He's still like that today.
So right.
We take great pride in the company.
Absolutely. And you can just tell, I mean, just like I said, you would think a place that's just filled with compost or mulch, the pavement and everything else would be filthy and everything, but it's not.
No.
It's amazing.
Absolutely not, no. It is spick and span.
So now what's your actually, let's say, purpose here with the company?
I do all the marketing, events, social media, you name it. We're a lot of hats here.
I bet. And, you're doing a great job. So
thank you.
Thanks a lot, Sarah. Good to talk to you, and I'll talk to you again next hour.
Thanks, Mike.
Yep. And now let's go to Chesterfield and into Tom's yard. Hi, Tom.
Tom, thanks, Dave, for taking the call. I have about a 40-foot white pine in my backyard, and when I was trimming on it, I've noticed like quarter-inch holes, hundreds of them on the trunk, about eye level.
Right.
And I'm concerned about losing that nice tree.
Well, the tree probably is okay. That's sapsuckers. So, in other words, sapsuckers, they hold onto the side of the trunk, and then they just move over a little bit, and then they're, they're sap suckers, so that's what's happening.
Is it a bird or what is it?
It is a bird, yes. Look up sap suckers on the internet.
Okay.
And you'll see. Yeah.
I did lose a white pine up front, and I thought maybe that was the reason for that one, but...
No, basically, the birds are smart enough that, this is a food source for them. So
yeah.
They know, even though there might be multiple sap suckers coming, they kind of realize that we better watch out because if we do too much, we may kill this tree. So consequently, they're always going to be conscious of that, whether they're using their brain or just an instinct or whatever it happens to be. So whatever killed your white pine, there's several different kinds of diseases that are wiping out pines just in general through the region. Anthracnose is the main disease, and it started with Austrian pines, went to Scotch, and then now it's impacting the white pines. But I'm not saying that's what got rid of or killed yours, but that's one of the things that kills it, and it's not going to be sapsuckers.
Well, I appreciate it because I was concerned about it. It's a beautiful tree.
Yeah, so just look at sapsuckers online, then you can start watching for the birds.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yep, and now let's go from Chesterfield over to Centralia, Illinois, and into Shirley's yard. Hi, Shirley.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
Hi, very good.
I have a red maple. It's around 15 to 20 years old. And the trunk is about 8 inch in circumference, and on about 3 feet up, there's a branch that extends. And it might be 6 to 7 inches wide right now, and then it breaks into a V with two branches that are 4 or 5 inches. And my concern is that as that would get heavier and bigger, can I still cut part of that V off, or can I cut the whole off? Or is that too far gone?
No. I would say go ahead and remove it. But because it is
the trunk on.
Yeah, but let me explain the best way to go about doing this. Start at the end and start just cutting off 2 or 3 foot sections. So in other words, if you try to just cut it at the trunk, it's going to end up, the weight of the branch is going to end up tearing your bark, and you don't want that to happen. So cut it off in sections all the way back, and then your final cut, you're going to have about a 1 or 2 foot section of the branch that you're removing left. Then, have somebody hold it up, or you hold it up, or whatever it happens to be, and then make the cut where you're going to leave about a quarter inch or so stub, and that's all. Don't leave a long stub or anything else. By leaving just a quarter inch, you allow the cambium layer, which is the layer that forms the scab over an open wound, and don't put any pruning sealer, nothing like that on it, because that stuff just doesn't do any good anymore because they took the lead out of it. So cut it off in sections with the final cut leaving a quarter inch stub next to the trunk.
Okay, that sounds good. I have one other point. I wanted to have a mimosa in my yard, and I found some seeds, so I planted it in a pot. Well, right now it's maybe only 6 inches tall. Do you bring that in the winter to make it last, or it's kind of young to put it out in the ground, isn't it?
Well, probably, is it in a plastic pot?
No, I have it in a clay pot.
Well, that it really doesn't matter. Plastic would be best. But anyway, just dig a hole someplace in your garden and drop the pot down into the hole, leaving about an inch or so of the top of the pot above the surrounding ground, and then just let it grow in the pot for a couple more years before you put it out in your landscape.
Do I cover
can put a little bit of 1 or 2 inches of mulch. That's all you need. But you're just dropping it down in a hole in a garden space or in a bed space or something like that. That will insulate the root system.
Okay, I'll do that then. All right, you solved two problems.
Yeah, if you'd bring it inside, it'd be really unhappy. So don't do that.
Well, now, wanted to save it, so I didn't know what was best for it.
Right. So that's the best thing to do. And just, like I said, grow it into a pot a couple years and just then move it into your landscape once you've got a nice sunny location. Thanks, Shirley. And now let's go to Becky in St. Charles. Hi, Becky.
Good morning. I'd like to have a basil plant live on my kitchen windowsill, and I'm having some problems killing them off this year. I just got some new ones from a nursery that I have a lot of confidence in. And I got them home, and I cleaned my windowsill with some alcohol like he suggested I do before I put these out. And I noticed that the next morning there was a lot of debris on the window ledge that looked like a very fine-grained pepper. And a number of the leaves were kind of withered up, and they were black and dried, and they hadn't been that way the night before. I held them under my water faucet and washed them off some and sat them out on the counter and cleaned the window area again. But I'm still getting, even on the counter, I'm getting a couple of these grains of these. I'm assuming there's some kind of an insect, but they don't seem to move around. But so I've pinched off all the leaves that seem to be withering up, and I don't know what to do. I'm kind of frustrated. I really like having the fresh live basil.
Have you grown basil before in your window?
Yes.
And so you've had good success with it?
I've had success with it. The last basil that I got, I picked up at one of the lumber company places that have plants in the summer, and those started kind of crystallizing on me. They didn't turn yellow and die. They didn't wither up. The leaves just started turning a kind of silver gray, and then if you touched them, they kind of crumbled. And so I got rid of those, and I told the guy at the nursery about, what had happened with those plants. I got two, and they both kind of did this. And he looked it up on the web, and he suggested that I clean my window and window ledge with alcohol, that it was a fungus. And so I did that before I put these two new ones on my windowsill.
I'm going to make a joke here. So you're growing your basil in pots. You're not just laying them on the windowsill. So in other words, I don't know how in the world a fungus could come off your windowsill and get into your pots and cause problems that you're describing. That seems impossible. Usually fungus problems come with the plants. They don't, I'm not saying it can happen, but as quickly as you're describing how these things happen, there's no way it can come off your windowsill, your window, or anything else. So I think, are your basils, are they flowering?
No.
So they're not in flower.
They're in leaf.
How tall are they?
Well, these that I just got are probably, at least 6 to 9 inches tall. They're pretty good size.
Look on the underside of your leaf. and see if you see any kind of insects on the underside of the leaf. Usually basil, most of the herbs are pretty insect-free, but I would say if you're having this kind of, let's say, anxiety, I would say give up on basil for this year because you've already tried it, you know, twice, and you're really, let's say, upset overall with the performance of your basils. So just give up.
Well, I like to use it for my cooking.
Well, I think stores have basil. No, you can buy basil leaves and you know other things, but I understand. I like pesto myself. I like basil a lot. But consequently, if you've had this kind of circumstance happen, either that or try putting your basil, either the plants you have, kind of the garden centers are running out of, you know, let's say things like basil. But
right.
Try under grow lights as opposed to in your window. But look on the underside of your leaf because it sounds, if you're seeing little black spots there, it sounds like you're having, you know, some kind of, let's say, aphid or something along that line that's actually going to the bathroom. At first, I ask you if you have flowers on it because it could have been the flowers dropping some seedlets but or seeds. But, you know, it doesn't sound like that's what you have.
I don't think so, no. I'm assuming
yeah.
I haven't had flower on basil plants before, but I'm assuming it would be something like what you see on mint.
Right.
Kind of at the ends of the stems.
Right. So
okay. No,
that's right, exactly where it would be. And so consequently, I would say get rid of these, get a grow light, try them under grow lights.
Okay. All right. Thanks for the suggestion.
Yeah, I don't understand. You know, the whole cleaning the windowsill with alcohol seems pretty wild, but you tried it. So anyway. Good luck, Becky, and if your basil works out well, please save some for me so I can make some pesto. Thanks a lot. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Once again, here's Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, folks, we're broadcasting live and lively from St. Louis Composting Valley Park location on Elam Avenue right down here in Valley Park. It's really off 141, very easy to find, and also just north of Highway 44. So let's go to Potosi and go into Bill's yard. Hi, Bill.
Hey, Mike. How are you doing this morning?
Very good.
Hey, I got a question about apple trees. When's the best time to trim those things back, and how far back should they go, and is there anything special you need to do to them when you trim them?
First of all, how old are they?
Oh, they're pretty old. They're kind of gotten out of hand. They're probably close to 8 years old.
Okay, so they're probably, if they were a standard size apple tree, then this is probably the age that they really start bearing a lot of fruit. And if they were semi-dwarf, then it'd be a few years less than that. And truly dwarf apple trees, they're going to give you fruit, you know, a few years less than that. But what you need to do is, if you enjoy seeing the flowers in the springtime, if that matters to you, do the pruning right after they flower. And what you want to do is you kind of want to make the branching go outward so it kind of looks like an upside-down umbrella. So in other words, that's how you can maximize the amount of fruit you're going to get. And also just watch out. I was at a house this past week. They had younger fruit trees, but they had so much fruit on them that they were starting to, cause the branches to bend and everything else. So you got to watch out about the weight. So go ahead, let them flower. And if you start seeing fruit set and you think it might be a little bit too much fruit on that particular branch of the tree, then take some of the fruit off.
So, if you're trimming in order to get more fruit and to make the tree smaller, what do you do?
You're not going to prune to get more fruit. Pruning doesn't give you more fruit. That's not, you know, you need to have the branches to produce the fruit. So if you cut the branches back, you're actually reducing the amount of flowers that's going to be there. So consequently, you're going to reduce the amount of fruit that's going to be, you know, produced. So selectively,
right.
Any kind of branches that are crossing or anything like that, any suckers that are coming off the base of the trunk at the ground level, get rid of those. So anything that kind of looks like, it doesn't look like an umbrella, you know, upside down umbrella, just, you know, start clearing out that kind of stuff.
Okay. All right.
And that's
probably,
you know, that's the best. Yeah, and I mean, some people, they let so much fruit get on these branches, they have to put, you know, pieces of lumber to support the branch so it doesn't cause cracking and things like that. You don't want to get to that point. That's just, you know, that's a little bit too crazy. But, yeah, just, you know, prune it so it's upside-down umbrella.
Okay. The one tree is pretty huge. It's probably 25 feet tall or so.
Yeah. So that tree, these trees are kind of big. Yeah, these trees are kind of big to start a pruning process. But, you know, on something that big, I would probably just go ahead and start removing some of the crossing branches just to open it up.
Okay. All right. Sounds good.
All right. Thanks, Bill. Oops. Looks like, sorry, Bill. Zachary from South City, how are you today?
Fantastic. If I had the time, I have so many things to ask you. this morning, I got some hydrangeas that are doing well, and they're the 3 to 6 foot tall variety. And two of them have so many blooms on them that they're hanging down near to the ground. And I was wondering if I would tie those back and tie those up to a pole, if that'll help strengthen the base of the plant. So it grows more upward and not as much out?
That would help a little bit, but doing it this late, I wouldn't do it. You know, I would probably do it next year before, as a new growth is just beginning. And okay. You could always just, you know, and you, I don't know exactly what position these are in, but movement in wind, that's how the girth of trees and shrubs and everything else, that's how they increase the size of the branches or twigs coming up out of the ground. So if they're in a location where there's not much wind, this is just going to naturally happen, you know, regardless of what you do. Yeah, you can, okay. You know, let's say support them and bring them together, or, you know, give them some support with bungee cords and poles and things like that. Just remember, if you pull these stems too close together, then they're not going to leaf out correctly, and that could cause a problem in and of itself.
Okay, and one other question. I planted canna bulbs this year, and they've come up, and they've been beautiful. I've enjoyed them all season. But I'm told that I have to dig those out. Is that right before the first frost, or...?
Well, you can do it whenever. You know, you could do it now if you wanted to, because they're pretty much finished flowering and everything else. But there are locations throughout the metropolitan area that people are leaving their cannas in the ground. They're putting a couple inches of mulch over the top of them, and then they're coming back the next year. So that, I'm not suggesting you do that. I have a lot of cannas myself. I always pull mine out. I don't want to do it after a frost because they get a little bit too mushy. So sometime, you know, around a little bit before Halloween, I usually just chop them off, pull them out. I have mine growing in pots. Pull them up out of the pots, shake all this potting mix off of them, and then I put them in cardboard boxes and put newspaper layers in between them and just store those in the basement.
Okay, wonderful. Well, that answered my question.
Great. And as far as storing them in the garage, I tried that a couple years. That worked fine for a couple years, but one year it got really, really cold. Then they all got frozen, so then it was just, you know, kind of a nightmare. So I only put half of them in the garage, half of them in the basement. So the half I put in the basement survived. The ones in the garage, like I said, turned into mush. So good luck, Zachary, and see if we can get one more call in. Stu in Chesterfield, can you do it kind of quick?
Yes, sir. We moved into this house about 15 years ago, and we have an atrium with two ficus trees, both above 20 feet tall.
Yikes.
Our main ficus has a crown at least 30 feet across. This year, we started noticing that we're losing a lot of leaves on a daily basis. Some are yellowish, some are fully green. And we're wondering what might be happening to our two ficuses.
I think they're just getting old. There's not enough, you know, sunlight and everything else for it to support the amount of leaves it's pushing out. So the dropping of the leaves, you know, the non-green ones, is somewhat normal, and especially if you have some that are this large. But the green ones, the tree just isn't, it doesn't have enough energy to support the leaves. That's why it's pushing them off.
Fertilizer, because they're in front of... two-story windows all the way across.
Yeah, but so that still doesn't matter. Fertilizer is not going to help. It's not. That's not the really the answer. The size of the pot, the amount of moisture, and everything else. They're in the ground?
No basement floor there.
Okay, so, but still, it's just, you know, they're just getting old. They're getting past their prime is what's happening.
Do we have to take them out, or?
Well, you don't necessarily have to. Just understand if you don't, probably next year you're going to have more leaf drop, more leaf drop, more leaf drop. Even if they're in the ground, there's still going to be a limited amount of root system that they have to be able to support the above ground growth.
Thanks, Stu.
Yep. Mike Miller, KMWatch Garden Hotline. We are live and lively at St. Louis Composting Valley Park location. If you have any questions or concerns, give us a call after the news.
KMOX is at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Now, here's your host, Mike Miller, on KMOX.
Speaking of St. Louis Composting, what a coincidence. That's where we're live and lively from. We're at the location, which is Valley Park. That's the headquarters. You should see this palace. No, I'm kidding. But anyway, if you'd like to come by, somebody came by and actually he did some seeding and core aeration, and he came by to get some mulch. He didn't want to rent the mulch spreader that they have here, but he's going to have somebody else do it for him. But he got the mulch to do it. Anyway, locations all over the metropolitan area. There's obviously this one in Valley Park where we're broadcasting from. St. Louis City facility, Pacific facility, Belleville facility, Florissant, and Maryland Heights. So check, you know, if you're going to pick up some products or anything else. It stopped raining here in Valley Park. I don't know about the rest of the metropolitan area. But if you want to go by and pick up some product from them, call the location to make sure, you know, everything's good. They can get you ready and loaded up. And this broadcast, well, Ryan's doing the engineering. And back in studio is Greg and Zach. They're doing the producing of the show. So when you call, they'll just ask you for your name and where you're calling from, and that's about it. So tip of the trowel is the second hour of the Garden Hotline. I'll be giving the tip in a few seconds. But thanks for having me on your show. Remember, if you were not there, I would not be here. If you have any questions, concerns, or comments about your landscape or things you've seen or anything else, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. We can talk about your annuals. Yes, your annuals still should be doing very, very well. They don't need major cutbacks, I wouldn't think, if you've kept fertilizing them and everything else. If you bought some spring flowering bulbs, do not plant them yet. Just keep them in a dry location, out of the sun and everything else, and wait for another, really probably you. You know, I think the end of after Halloween, that's when I like to plant my bulbs. Your edibles, your vegetable gardens, your tomatoes and your peppers downhill, but your broccoli and cauliflower, they're headed to the highlands. And your ground covers, houseplants, tropicals, lawns, perennials, roses, tree shrubs, vines, or water gardens. Please remember, my answers, comments, and opinions are strictly offered as an option for you to try to think about to see if it's going to help. But my way is not the only way by any means. I'm Mike Miller. I've been hosting the Garden Hotline since 1994. I've written 5 gardening books. 2 are currently available in various locations. And I write articles for the Missouri Gardener magazine. If you're considering changes in your landscape, your garden, your yard, or whatever it happens to be, or problem solving, aesthetics, it doesn't matter. You can have me come to your home and do a walk and talk. What I call is walk and talks, where I make a site visit to your home. You can go to www.mikemillerdesigns.com on the homepage. That's where my phone number and email address is. And guess what? We can start doing a walk and talk. Actually, after the show today, I'm headed to Wentzville to do a walk and talk. Today's tip of the trowel, a special recognition for individual, group, or a situation that's made an impression on me, is brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. Today's tip of the trowel goes out to, boy, there's a lot of events right now. I don't know what's happening in Clayton, but the Clayton Art Fair, that's one of Tracy and my favorites, as well as the one over in the Belleville Square. So, man, oh, man, hopefully things will get dried out. We'll probably head over, if it is tomorrow, then we'll probably head to the Clayton Art Fair. And also, tip of the trowel goes out to the Webster Groves Herb Society. They're having their autumn herb gathering. That's going to be next month, October 6th, from 9 to 2 from Rolling Ridge Nursery, and that is in Rolling Ridge. No, it's in Webster Groves, Rolling Ridge. Ha. But so again, the Autumn Herb Gathering, So the lady that was having trouble with her basil, maybe she should go to the Autumn Herb Gathering, and that's at Rolling Ridge Nursery in Webster Groves. Webster Groves Herb Society is going to have the big sale, and people will have all kinds of information. So I'm still a little bit confused by, you know, what was happening with her. And going back to the gentleman which we had to cut off because we had to go to the news, with the big ficus trees in his landscape or in his atrium that were planted in the ground, you know, I mean, trees do get old inside and outside both, but if they're dropping green leaves, again, I'm going to reemphasize that. And that's any tree, any, you know, whether it's a maple tree or a ficus tree inside of an atrium or anything else, green leaf drop is not a good sign. That's just like the, you know, the trees, it can't handle all the leaves. It's not, it doesn't have enough food energy. So I'm going to reiterate this too. Nutrients and moisture come up from the root system, go up to the leaves, then the leaves use sunlight to make chlorophyll. Chlorophyll is food for the plant. So obviously there's not enough chlorophyll being produced for the tree to hold on to these leaves. So it could be an aging factor. It could be several different things. Fertilizing is not necessarily, when something's not really, let's say, healthy, fertilizing doesn't necessarily make it healthy. Probably what I should have mentioned, I didn't have a chance to, is maybe getting some compost and working it into the ground, just like you would do for a tree outside. So in other words, take a hand trowel, dig it, you know, dig down a little bit, and put some compost in that hole, and then put, you know, the soil that you dug out, and just cover it back up and mix it in together. So, in other words, enrich your soil. The soil, even if you've been fertilizing, may just be exhausted. So, re-energize your soil with adding some compost, even if it's an atrium inside or your trees outside. Let's go now to St. Louis County and see what's going on with Jennifer. Jennifer, how are you?
Good. How are you, Mike? Thanks
Very
for
good.
The show. My question is, I moved into a house a couple years ago, and I think what I have in my backyard is a rhododendron bush, and it was beautiful when I moved in, but every year it has bloomed less and less, and it's very leggy, and I'm wondering if I can cut it back. I mean, the branches are quite thick.
Yeah. Basically, rhododendrons, they don't really do all that well here. There's going to be some that are really big, huge, massive, but there's a lot of them that have not even made it to past the first year or two, some that have grown to a certain point, and, you know, they what's going on with it? If you cut it back, you're going to cut it back to the point where there's no leaves probably back on it. So again, that goes back to what I was talking about. Plants need to have foliage. Foliage, and, you know, it doesn't matter if it's evergreen or deciduous, foliage is what makes food. And so if you remove a lot of the leaves, then that's not going to help it overall. I would say it's probably on its downhill slide, and I'm not saying to take it out, but just realize that, you know, this might be the age, might be the end of its life, especially if it's as large as what you're describing.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, and so fertilizing or anything else like that, and that's, you know, from my experience when I worked at the Botanical Garden in English Woodland Garden, there was some large rhododendrons around Tower Grove House. There was some other ones in various areas that were my responsibility beside the exact woodland garden. And it was just, you know, they looked fine, but as I went back a couple years after I left, you could see that they were in the, you know, sort of the downhill decline. So thanks, Jennifer. And now, well, we better take a break. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with your host, Mike Miller, on KMOX.
Yes, folks, we're live and lively from the headquarters of St. Louis Composting here in Valley Park. They've got locations throughout the metropolitan area. If you want information on those locations, well, you can just give them a call, 636-861-3344. Is that right, 44? Yes, of course, that's right. Florence lives in Troy, Missouri. Florence, how are you today?
I'm fine. Thank you, Mike, for taking my call.
Sure.
I have two questions about shooting star. A couple of years ago, I planted a few bulbs, and they have grown. And this year, I had a clump of about 25 blossoms. And the stalks are real tall, and they're bending over. And I need to know, do I cut them off now? And how and when will I separate bulbs, because my flower bed is small and they're growing to a pretty good size clump. So I'm going to have to cut down on the size of them. So So when do you dig up bulbs and replant them?
Now, when did they, are they finished blooming?
Yes.
Okay. So basically, any time after they finish blooming and your foliage has completely or started to turn, discolor and turn yellowish, then you can dig them up at that time. So you got, you can do it, you know, from that time, you know, all the way up until the new growth begins next year. So, and there, you know, I mean, there shouldn't, I don't know if you're going to need any help digging them up or not. Just make sure that when you dig them up, that you probably dig up, if you can, the entire clump and then separate the bulbs and decide how many you want to put back in the place.
Okay, thank you. I've not had such success with them before, so I really didn't know quite how to handle it.
Well, if you've had that kind of great success this year, maybe you shouldn't dig them up. Maybe you should just sacrifice some space for something else now and just, you know, revel in the idea that you're going to have great plant material with great flowers.
They were beautiful.
Yes.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you, and now let's go from Troy to High Ridge and see what's going on in Terry's yard. Hi, Terry.
Hi, I just have some quick questions. I've got a volunteer red bud that I have been helping along, and I want to move it to a different spot. Is now a good time to do that?
If you're going to do it relatively quickly, just make sure you water it really well the night before and then dig it up and have the location that you're moving it to ready so it can be just more or less set right into the garden space.
Okay.
Or the yard or landscape or whatever. Pardon me?
Is there any other better time to do this?
In essence, you really got, once the foliage starts, wait until the foliage starts turning colors or dropping, and then you do it before the new growth begins. Or you can just, you know, if you get it moved now, it's fine, because that way in the new location, you may lose a few of the flower buds that are on it. I don't know if it's flowered yet or not for you.
No, it's
but,
little.
You know, okay, so it's really little. So you sure you want to move it to another location?
Oh, yes. It's growing right next to the house. And I thought, well, I won't be out any money if I just put it somewhere else.
Yeah, just basically, you can either do that, put it in a new location in the ground, or as I continue to say, when we've got small little things like this, getting a pot, a plastic, black plastic nursery pot, 1 gallon size, at a garden center, putting it into the plastic pot with the, you know, potting mixes, and just sinking that pot into a hole in the ground. And it's much easier, in, you know, to grow plants in pots than it is in the ground, weather-wise and everything else. That's
Can
why production nurseries always have them growing in pots for the most part.
Okay. I'll take that in consideration. And then can I ask you another question about an established oak tree? It's probably 40, 45 years old, maybe 50, I'm not sure. Nice mature tree, and this summer the top half went brown, totally brown, in about 2 weeks. The bottom half is fine. So we talked to an arborist, and they said, let's wait till next spring. But I didn't know. Do you have any other thoughts on that?
No, it's a little tough to tell. I mean, if the guy was in the, you know, actually there and seeing it, but the top of it, the whole top died, and within 2 weeks.
Right.
That sounds, yeah, that sounds like something, you know, like a major situation. Did he get up into the tree, or was he just kind of looking at it from the ground?
No, he didn't get up there.
Because it sounds like to me there's a major crack or something in the top of the tree, because, I mean, it has to be something physical for the foliage to turn, you know, discolor that quickly. So it's not going to be a disease. It's not going to be insects. It's not going to be anything. It had to be some physical damage due to, you know, wind storms or something like that. I think he's right in waiting till next year to see if the thing's going to leaf out, but probably plan on the idea that you may have to have the whole top removed.
Well, and it's a big tree, and if it falls, it will definitely impact the house. So it's,
yikes.
That's a good thought to get somebody up there to look at that.
Yeah, because I would be a little concerned, especially if it could potentially impact your home, your car, your driveway, or anything else.
Yeah, no, it'll just take the house about, just split it down the middle, basically.
That tree's not that important.
All righty. Thank you very much.
Yep, and now let's go to Gary in Collinsville. Gary, how are you?
Pretty good. Good morning. I've got a couple questions. On my asparagus, I thought I heard you a couple weeks ago say that you can trim the tops off. I thought I was told or I listened to your show that wait until it dies back to trim it. And then on my knockouts, they're just going through their, I guess, their last flush of roses. Can I still fertilize them? And when is the best time to trim them back, this winter or before the new foliage? Then my last question is, I have a dogwood, and I planted in the middle of June. It was given to me, and all the leaf tips of the leaves are turning brown, every one of them. Is that from overwatering, not enough watering?
It could be either one. If you've been overwatering too much, then it could be that. It could be just the result of that dry spell that we had. But if just the tip of the leaf, don't worry about that. Your knockout roses, no fertilizer on them at this from this point forward. And let the rose hips form, so it'll be like little round balls that kind of look like flower buds, only they're, you know, actually spent flowers. And let's see, I can't remember your other questions, to be honest with you.
Asparagus, when to trim it back.
Oh, the asparagus. Yeah, don't. I mean, you can, once they'll open up and flower. You know, you've harvested them before they actually, those tips that we eat that we really like are actually potentially flowers. Once they finish flowering, you can cut them all the way back down to the ground. So,
okay, I mean, it looks like a big fern out there right now.
Exactly. Right. So once they get to that point, they're kind of pretty much finished for this season. So you can cut them back down to a couple inches. So the asparagus, and then you had one other question.
That was it. I thought that give the roots nutrients and stuff before I cut them back. Because I thought before you told me to wait until they died off, then trim the tops off. I mean, around June, I quit picking the vegetable itself.
So they've had, you know, basically 3 months since then to build the root systems back up. So I'm not saying you have to do it now. You can wait. But, you know, if they were, you know, causing you grief or something else like that, you could cut them back now.
That's what I was wanting to know. I'd rather cut them back because with this wind and all this rain now, they're just blowed over and
right. Just
looks like a mess out in my garden.
Yeah, and it's not really going to help them that much, you know, once we get to this point where the days are getting shorter and shorter and shorter. We're really kind of at the, you know, we've only got one more week of summer, and then we're really into fall, and that doesn't mean all that much, except the fact that the days get shorter and shorter and shorter and shorter, all the way up till December 22nd.
Okay, thank you. That's what I wanted to know.
Great, and now let's go from Collinsville to South City. Michelle, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. I have a question about a willow tree.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about 2 years old, and it's actually my daughter's yard in Afton. And then they got a puppy, and the puppy got big and decided it would be fun to strip the bark off the willow tree. So it killed a bunch of the branches going up, in fact, almost all of them. But then it's branching out from the trunk now, and there's probably a good 20 new branches coming out from the trunk. A few are still leafing at the top of the tree, but not too many, and those are all completely dead. So my question is this worth saving this tree? Will it grow up to be a normal willow tree?
Let me think. Dwiz and dwaz and dwaz and dwone. Did you send me an email with a picture of this?
I did.
Yeah, I just didn't get around to answering it. Basically, you don't want a willow tree coming out with that many branches, you know, at the base, at the ground, because it's going to be a nightmare. They're problematic in many other ways, but I would say this tree should probably just be replaced.
Okay, I was afraid of that.
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to. What you can do is just leave it alone, cut that top off that, you know, just has a few leaves on it, get rid of that entirely, and then just let all the side branches that are coming out of the base grow, and then selectively, whichever ones are the most aggressive, you know, you're going to actually turn that into the major trunk, and then, you know, remove a lot of them. But anything more than two or three branches off a willow tree that would become the trunk, I'd be a little bit concerned with.
Okay. All right, well, we'll see what we can do.
All right, great. So I'm glad. Yeah, I thought I had visions of this, and dwiz and dwaz and dwaz and dwaz. Anyway,
I'm like, this just doesn't look very normal.
No, it's going to be trouble.
Okay, all right, thanks, Mike.
Yep, and now let's go to, now we better take a break. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Once again, here's Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, folks, we're going to be going to the phones. Mary Jo from Escuta in a few seconds, but right now joining me is Sarah. Sarah is one of the big wheels here at St. Louis Composting. I was talking to her about her favorite location. Of course, Valley Park. No, she likes them all. She travels to all of them, and you can go to all of them, too. You could get some compost from every location and check it out and see if it's well done here, there, and every place else. I guarantee you it's all going to be well done. So, Sarah, what's going on? Rain has stopped. So a few people are coming by.
Yeah, a few people are coming by, getting loaded up with the STA certified field and turf compost to top dress their lawns. It's
right.
That time of year.
Absolutely. And also I see that you have dumping fees. So if you have, you know, bags of yard waste and things like that, please remember that if you have them in plastic bags, St. Louis Composting wants you to dump the stuff out of the plastic bag once you get here. So, and then take the plastic bags with you. So they don't want that kind of problem. But Patrick Garrity, who is the founder and owner or whatever of St. Louis Composting, you said he's in Seattle, correct?
Yeah, he's in Seattle right now.
And what they're trying to do is see if there's some way to work some plastic into the compost world?
We're working on a certified line called CMA plastics, so it'll be certified compostable plastics that we can take in our site and just process it and break down properly.
So it's specific types of plastic, so
correct.
In other words, it can be composted.
Right.
So it's not like that crazy stuff you see in the ocean where they take those satellite pictures, the things the size of Texas or something along that line.
Yeah, there's a lot of greenwashing out there, so we want to try and stop that.
Great. Well, that's great. And that's the neat thing about Patrick. I'm sure all the company gets together and thinks of these things. But yeah, this is probably the next step because plastic is going to sooner or later, kind of fall off the edge of reality.
Mm-hmm.
So this compostable plastics is a great way.
Yes.
So thanks, Sarah.
Okay, thank you.
Yep. And now Mary Jo in Muscoota, Illinois. How are you today?
Called you last week about a 2 or 3 year old blue spruce that I have. And my daughter, Julianne, drove some Job's fertilizer spikes in the ground in April sometime. And on the package, it recommends that you also do that in the fall. But you told me that I shouldn't do that in the fall, and I was wondering why.
Basically, what can happen is if you feed late and we have an extended, let's say, warm period of time, the fertilizer can melt. It could trigger some, let's say, the nutrients going up through the root system, and it might force some of the, let's say, candles, the tips of the spruce tree, to open slightly. So that's the reason why I don't like to fertilize until we get into the colder weather. Now, late fall, early winter, midwinter, late winter, that's fine. But basically, early fall, I just don't think it's a good idea. You could do it. I mean, and you could call back and, next year or something and say, you don't know what you're talking about, which is great. But I'm just thinking that's not the best way to do it because even Job's spikes, they're going to start dissolving, and especially if we have rain like this, and it might cause some out of sequence growth. That was my concern.
I see. And what was it that you recommended that I sprinkle around the ground?
Basically, compost. So in other words, not just sprinkle it on top. You could just sprinkle it on top of the ground, but if you can get somebody or yourself with an electric drill, an earth auger, which is a big size drill, and just start augering some holes, concentric circle all the way around, about 6 inches deep, and backfill those holes with compost, then that's going to feed your soil. And then routinely what happens is the soil like translates fertilizer into something that actually the trees, plants, or whatever it happens to be can use.
But you also recommended some kind of sprinkle, some kind of sulfate or sulfur.
Iron sulfate, just to keep it to keep this iron, iron sulfate, sulfate. So iron sulfate, just to keep the soil acidic around the spruce.
And you just work that into the ground or what?
Yeah. You can either rake the soil and put it down and then just water it in.
Well, I have grass growing around my blue spruce, so how do I work that into the ground with the grass there?
Well, your grass doesn't probably go up to the trunk, does it? And even if it does, it's not going to hurt your lawn.
Well, just put it right close to the trunk then?
Put it halfway out from the trunk to however far the branches are.
Oh,
so
okay.
Thanks, Mary Jo. And now Pat, let's go to Pat in St. Peter's. Hi, Pat.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I bought last spring I went to a garden center, and I bought some like wooden frames that had little succulents stuck in. Really attractive. And we hung them on an outside wall in our house, and I totally didn't expect this to happen, but they thrived. They're doing really well. They look great. So I don't know what to do with them. Like, what do you do with them when the weather changes here?
Well, these are probably not hardy type succulents. So my guess is they're more like the ones that can grow in Southern California, Florida, Texas, and areas like that where the weather doesn't get severe. If you leave them outside, they're just going to freeze. So you can bring them inside if you want to, or just let them freeze and get some new ones for next year.
Oh, okay. Next question is about a fern. I bought the same place. It's a very large fern. It's not a Boston fern. I can't remember what it is. But I put it on a screened-in porch, and I thought, well, that thing will be dead in 3 weeks. And it's just going to town. What do I do with that?
Well, obviously, you listen to the Garden Hotline. Ho, 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 ho. No, basically, with ferns, if you bring them inside, and they're tropical-type ferns, which this sounds like it actually is, it's going to drop all kinds of stuff on the inside of your house. So this, again, is something that you could go ahead and bring it inside, put it in a sunny window, even though they say ferns want shade, blah, blah, blah. In the wintertime, they got to have as much light as they possibly can. And, either set it on a table or whatever and rotate it about every week so you always get some light on all the fronds all the way around it. If you don't, the backside is going to lose all the leaflets off of it and turn really ugly. But or you can just go ahead and enjoy it. Take a picture, take a selfie, impress all your friends and say, see, I've become a success, and then consequently get a new one.
There you go. Yeah, so it's kind of extendable if you don't let them mess.
Yes,
it, right?
Exactly. Okay. It's kind of like annuals. So in other words, you don't bring all your begonias in, you don't bring your petunias in, you don't bring all your annuals because it's too crazy. So just consider these things sort of like annuals.
Oh, okay. And one more quickie. I love mums, and I want to get some for my yard. I leave them in the pots, and I just set them out, and they look great. How long do they last? I mean, I want, obviously, you want blooms on. Last through October.
If you want them to last through October, that's kind of a real, ooh, we just had a flash of electricity or something here. But anyway, they got to be in really, really, really tight bud, because generally once the flowers start opening up and once the flowers fully open, you're going to get about 10 to 14 days of flower before they start going downhill.
Okay. All right. So if I want them to go into October, well, I should wait a couple weeks here, right?
Either that or get them with the buds really, really tight that are not showing any color at all.
Okay. All right. Okay. Well, thank you so much for your help.
Sure. And now let's go to Ed, and Ed lives in Oakville. Hi, Ed.
Hi, how you doing?
Very good.
I got about a 35-foot magnolia tree, and I was wondering what the best time to trim that. And also, do you trim it at the trunk, or can you trim it out farther, too?
Is it an evergreen magnolia or a deciduous?
I don't know what the difference is. It's an evergreen. It blooms all year, so yeah. So.
Well, evergreen means the leaves stay on it all year. Deciduous means it loses its leaves in the fall/early winter.
No, it loses them in the summertime. Yeah.
So it loses all, not in the summertime, just it drops. So in other words, the leaves look like plastic.
Right. Uh-huh. Yes.
So you don't want to, on any kind of tree, you don't want to just stub any of the branches back. Because what that does is mean that the branches you're doing that to are no longer going to have any sunlight hitting them. And so consequently, because of the branches that are around them are longer than that, so then they're not going to help with the overall health of the tree, and the tree's going to compartmentalize them and kill that branch off. So you're better off with longer branches, cut them off in sections, and the final cut, whether it's going into the trunk or another larger branch, cut it back so there's about a quarter-inch stub.
Okay. And what's the best time of the year to do that?
It depends upon, you know, kind of your own personal circumstance. You can really do it any time coming out of, let's say, probably after the Ides of March, mid-March or something like that, just before the new growth begins.
Uh-huh. Can you do it in like around December, or is that a good time or not a good time?
Well, you can do it. It's just, you know, we never know what our weather's going to be like. So you cut, let's say, X amount of branches off, and then consequently we have a severe winter, and you could have some branch killed because they are hardy trees, but they're still prone to winter damage if we get severe cold. So that's the disadvantage of doing it going into winter. I always like to do, you know, especially on evergreens coming out of wintertime, and especially evergreens that bloom in the summer, which this magnolia tree does.
Okay, so it'd be better off trimming it like in March or April rather than now. Or
Before the new growth begins. So sometime after Valentine's Day, Ides of March, something like that. But before you start to see some new growth, you know, coming out of, from a foliage standpoint.
Yeah, I'm usually out of town until April. Would I be better off doing it now then?
I probably would not, but it's up to you.
Okay.
How come you're pruning it? Well,
it's got some really low branches on it right now, and you can't really get underneath it. It's pretty, you know, they're pretty big, and they're you know, I mean, they're 4 foot off the ground or 3 foot off the ground, and they're big, you know. So
So, in other words, these are long branches. Cut them off in sections with the final cut at the trunk. You know, with just leaving a quarter inch.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yep. And Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after the.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with your host, Mike Miller, on KMOX.
Oh, Sarah. Sarah's twisting my arm. Ow, ow. I forgot to say St. Louis Composting does deliver. So, but not just single bags and stuff like that. I mean, be real. So call if you want some delivered and find out if they'll deliver to you. And ask if they'll bring a Frappuccino as well. Let's go to Chris in Cottleville. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Mike. Good morning.
Hi.
I got 2 yards that have been decimated grass, but for different reasons. One is lack of water, whatever. The other one is I had a deck built on the back of the house, and I let the grass grow high, but still by walking on it and storing materials, it looks like brown shag carpet.
Right.
I have a course of action, which I'd like for you to listen to on both yards. One would be dethatch, then aerate, and put compost down, and then put triple 12 fertilizer, then put the
seed fertilizer.
Down.
No fertilizer. Don't do triple 12. Triple 12 is an agricultural fertilizer. That's a, you know, it's a fast reactor, so don't do that. Get a seed starter type fertilizer.
Okay. So I'm okay with dethatching, aerate, and compost, then fertilizer, right?
Right.
And then seed, then lightly rake it, and then water it. Is that the course of action on both yards?
Yeah, that's fine, but you put the seed down before you put the compost down, and then you don't really have to rake. So you don't, there's no reason to rake.
Okay, what's the fertilizer again, Mike, I should be using?
It's a seed starter, so it'll say right on the bag. So in other words, it has the exact type of nutrient levels and everything for newly germinated seed. Triple 12 is too fast reacting.
Okay. How thick should I put the compost down?
Any place between a quarter and a half inch.
Is that something I can put down with the spreader if it's fine enough?
Yeah, if it's fine enough, or you can just, you can kind of dump it or just throw it out with a shovel, and then if you get kind of big piles of it, you know, with throwing it out or however you end up doing it, turn like a garden rake, not a leaf rake, upside down and rake it, not with the tines, with just to smooth it out and spread it.
Okay. Would this work on my yard as one of them, that the grass is so thick it looks like brown shag carpet? Can I still do this process there also?
Yeah, you might. It's yeah. I mean, that's exactly what you're trying to renovate the whole thing.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Yep. And now let's go to High Ridge into Gary's yard. Hi, Gary.
Hi, Mike. Hey, I had a question for you. Okay. My mom lives on a bluff overlooking the Merrimack River. Okay. And there's this cottonwood tree down there. And all I'm going to say, it's about 100 feet tall. And the diameter, are you ready for this? It's 12 feet. Is there any way you can tell, like, how old the tree is? But besides, you know, like, counting the rings or whatever, like...
Well, you could probably go online and just, look at the diameter of a cottonwood tree. It could probably give you a rough estimate, you know, more so. Yeah, counting the rings, I mean, I tried to do that even as a kid when we cut trees in the woods just for the heck of cutting trees. And it's just like, no way. So, I mean, cottonwoods are, along the ways that I walk, there's some pretty huge cottonwoods in there. They're relatively fast growing. They get a lot of girth to the trunk. So it may be, you know, massively old, or you could just maybe go to County Extension, University of Missouri County Extension in Jefferson County, and see what they think about a tree of this size and see what they would give an estimate for the age.
Oh, okay, yeah, because this is the biggest tree I've ever seen in Missouri. It's just dwarfs everything else, you know. So, yeah, that's all I had. I was just wondering, like, if it's like a couple hundred years old or something. I don't know.
Yeah, it's probably not that old. But, it's substantial. There's no getting around it. Well, thanks, Gary. Jenny from St. Louis, how are you?
Hi, Mike. Can you talk a little bit about aerating? We've never done that, but our yard looks good, but we want to do that this year, and I'm not real sure what to do after he does that.
Basically, if you're just aerating and you're not putting any seed down or anything else, still you want to core aerate, so that's a machine, not something that just sticks tines into the ground. A machine that takes, like, wine bottle corks out of the ground, then you want to spread some compost over the top of that, so the compost drops in those holes from the aeration.
Okay, and if he does want to seed a little bit?
Then just do the core aeration, then put the seed down, then the compost.
Okay, and that's it? Okay, and
that's
it's still okay to do that this year, or are we too late?
As long as you have a cool season lawn, you're not doing this on Zoysia, I'm assuming.
That's correct.
Okay, so then you're fine.
Okay, all right, great. Thanks for the help. Bye.
Yep, Tom in St. Louis County, you got to do it rather quickly.
Yes, I have a trumpet bush, you know, for like hummingbirds.
Yeah, and so it has orange flowers, trumpet creeper. Yeah.
Right, and I got all of these looks like cigars. And what are those good for? What should I do with them?
Well, basically, that's seeds, so you can either just get rid of them or do whatever you want to. It doesn't really matter. I mean, some of them will drop and germinate on their own, and that's probably what you're looking at.
All right, but I got, 40 or 50 of them on this tree. Can I give them to people to make this bush?
Yeah, I mean... a lot of the vines that I have in my own yard, let's say I have a hyacinth bean vine. Tracy and I were up in a winery, and they had some hyacinth beans, which is a vine that has, purplish flowers, and it gets these purple pods because it's in the bean family. So I gathered some seeds. This was probably 15 years ago. I'm still getting new seeds every year that I'm planting it, and probably my hyacinth bean vine, from growing it from seed, is probably like 25 feet long and maybe 6 or 7 feet high.
Well,
you can grow them.
I usually cut this bush back to almost, small things, and then it comes back every year.
Yeah, the trumpet creeper is a very tough vine, so it works very well. So thanks, Tom. Thanks to everybody for calling in. I greatly appreciate it. And thanks to the people here at St. Louis Composting for having us out. Bagels and donuts and drinks, oh my. So St. Louis Composting for all your organic needs. Mike Miller, I will see you next week.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.